Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take your stack of sources, all the articles, the research, the notes, and boil it all down to the essential knowledge you need to be up to speed right now. And today we are dissecting a pretty incredible late year review. We're sort of at this intersection of high stakes future tech, blockbuster gaming, and even the indie underground. Our mission is to pull out the most important insights from this whole digital landscape for you. And, you know, if you listen closely, there's a hidden thread that connects all of it.
Yeah, there absolutely is. That thread is really a story of aggressive innovation, but it's coming from like two totally opposite places.
Okay.
On one side, you have this maximalism, you know, the hunt for billions of dollars in power and graphics. And then right next to it, you've got this radical minimalism. So we're seeing companies and creators just challenging what we expect in both directions.
That's a great way to frame it.
Yeah.
So let's start with a company making one of those radical minimalist bets, HTC. I think a lot of people probably still see them as a VR player, but the sources show they're making, well, a very direct challenge to Meta and Apple.
That's right. They are completely redefining wearable computing with these HTC Vive AI glasses. And what's so shocking is how much they've stripped away. They're basically abandoning the whole high-end VR war.
Absolutely. This is the anti-Vision Pro. The materials are pointing to a super aggressive price, just $399 with a Q1 2026 release.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the kicker, right? There is no display.
None.
No pass-through video, no virtual screens floating in the air, nothing.
And that's because they're shedding that whole visual mixed reality idea and banking everything on a concept called ambient computing.
Ambient computing.
Yeah, think of it this way. High-end AR wants to put digital screens in your world. It's demanding your attention. Ambient computing just wants to understand your world and give you subtle help without ever breaking your focus. It's pure invisible utility.
And the hardware is all designed for that subtlety, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, to be constantly aware without being a visual distraction. It's packed with dual micro cameras, LiDAR for depth, and this brilliant UI bone conduction audio.
The bone conduction is the secret sauce.
Right.
It whispers the AI's answers directly into your inner ear, so you can get directions, translations, whatever, but you're still completely engaged with what's in front of you. Your ear isn't blocked.
Okay, but here's the question. If they're doing all this processing locally on the glasses to make it fast, doesn't that just kill the battery on a tiny, what is it, a 45-gram device? What's the trade-off?
That is the key technical problem they seem to have solved. By getting rid of the display entirely, they've eliminated the single biggest power drain in any smart glass system. And that power saving lets them run a pretty powerful local AI model, which is way faster and more private than streaming to a server, and still get all-day battery life. It's a huge gamble on, you know, non-disruptive knowledge. The use case is just so human. You're walking in a foreign city, you look at a menu, and the translation is instantly whispered to you.
Or the classic, where did I leave my keys?
Exactly. The glasses just review the visual buffer and point you in the right direction.
And it seems like that bet is being noticed. They're aiming right at the Meta Ray-Ban glasses, but with way more on-device intelligence. HTC stock jumped 4% in pre-market trading.
So investors are clearly interested. It's the $400 AI tool, not the $3,500 AR toy.
Okay, so from minimalist tech, let's pivot completely to maximalist gaming. And the shockwave Nintendo just sent through the industry with one of its, well, traditionally niche franchises.
You have to be talking about Samus Aran finally getting her due.
I am talking about Metroid Prime 4. Beyond, the sales figures are just, I mean, they completely rewrite the history of that series. 5 million copies sold in its first 19 days.
You really have to pause there for a second. Let that number sink in.
Right.
Metroid has always been a critical darling, you know, universal praise, but it's always been a commercial underdog next to Mario or Zelda. The original Metroid Prime on GameCube, an absolute classic, sold about 2.8 million copies.
In its entire lifetime.
Its entire lifetime. 5 million in under 3 weeks is... It's not just a success, it's a generational shift for the franchise.
And analysts are already chalking this up to what they're calling the Switch 2 effect. What are the technical sources saying about why this game, specifically, is pushing console sales so hard?
It was the perfect graphical showcase for the new hardware. Digital Foundry's analysis confirms this is the next-gen Nintendo experience people have been waiting for. Decades of graphical compromises are just... gone.
So we're talking a locked 60 frames per second.
Locked 60, which is crucial for a game this fast, but it's also the subtle things like the ray traced reflections you can see on Samus's visor and on metal surfaces. High fidelity and Nintendo's art style are finally working together.
That success story is one kind of celebration. But on the more hardcore Soulsborne side of things, the community was celebrating a different kind of victory, more like salvation by patch.
Ah, yes, the Christmas miracle. From Software dropping Elden Ring, Nightreign patch 1.05.
Which was a direct response to the community meltdown over that new DLC area, right?
Yeah.
The Forsaken Hollows.
Oh, absolutely. It was treacherous, not because it was hard, but because everyone felt it was just unfairly designed.
It was so dark you couldn't see the cliff edges. So what did patch 1.05 actually do to, you know, save everyone's controllers?
They hit the three biggest pain points. First, the lighting. They tweaked the ambient light so it's still dark and creepy, but you can actually see the edges of platforms now.
So the challenge is the enemy, not the environment.
Exactly. Second, and this is huge for build diversity, they fixed the weapon balance. Heavy weapons, especially the big colossal swords, got a major speed buff. Before the patch, you just couldn't use them against the fast DLC bosses. Now, heavy builds are viable again.
And the last thing.
They squashed a critical crash during the Lunar Knight boss fight. It just shows that, you know, difficulty is the point of these games, but when it comes from bad lighting or bugs, the community will push back. And From Software listened.
Okay, so we've covered revolutionary hardware and AAA blockbusters. But we have to look at the low-budget, high-creativity PCE scene. I mean, Steam's trending Games You Missed section just perfectly captures that simplicity versus complexity thing we talked about.
It really does. It's a beautiful contrast.
On one side, you've got the dark humor of Murderous Idler. It's basically a cookie clicker style game, but the theme is you're a cartoon serial killer cleaning up crime scenes.
Right, upgrading your mops and alibis.
Exactly. The source notes call it the perfect podcast game. It's engaging enough to click, but simple enough that you can multitask. And then on the total opposite end of the spectrum, you have the Zen masterpiece, River Bottle Sim.
Radical simplicity.
Totally. No enemies, no score.
Yeah.
Your only control is the current. You just float a glass bottle down a low poly river to some chill lo-fi beats.
And that overwhelmingly positive rating on Steam tells you everything. It's the same thing as the HTC glasses.
Yeah.
There is this huge hunger for low-friction, non-demanding experiences right now.
It makes sense. After fighting the Lunar Knight, you need some digital decompression.
That need for comfort also explains this really interesting yearly Reddit tradition. The community picks Splinter Cell Blacklist to replay, specifically on December 23rd every year.
And it's all about the atmosphere, right? It centers on one specific mission, American consumption. It's set in Chicago during Christmas, snow everywhere, decorations. It's become this annual ritual for a certain type of gamer.
And the community is actively keeping it alive. Modders just released a 2025 texture pack today, specifically to upscale the lighting and textures for that snowy Chicago night.
Wow.
It just shows how powerful that seasonal atmosphere is. People will literally put in the work to keep a decade-old game looking fresh for their ritual.
And beyond mods, Game Pass is also leaning into that kind of specific nostalgia with its holiday content drop.
Yeah, they're catering to some very specific tastes. For the boomer shooter crowd, you know, those fast, gory 90s shooters, they dropped Blood. Refresh Supply.
The 1997 classic.
Now with 4K support and unlocked frame rates. Pure retro action. And then you have the game that was vaporware for like a decade. Routine?
It finally launched. It's this lo-fi, sci-fi horror game on a lunar base in an alternate 80s. The one detail that jumped out at me from the sources was the permadeath mechanic.
High stakes. And that mix of retro shooters and high-risk vaporware, it shows that subscription services see the value in funding projects for these deep, established subcultures, even if they aren't as big as Metroid.
Speaking of a creative risk paying off, let's talk about the streaming world's big hit. Aztec, Batman, Clash of Empires. This wasn't just a reskin. It was a complete and really respectful lore reimagining.
It's Elseworlds storytelling at its best. They didn't just move the setting. They integrated the characters into Mesoamerican mythology. Bruce Wayne becomes the Aztec warrior Yuwali.
And the Joker is the chaotic god of death.
Right, and Two-Face is a conflicted conquistador captain. It all just worked.
And the critics loved it, not just for the story, but for the authenticity. The animation style mimics ancient Mesoamerican art, and the choice to use the Nahuatl language with subtitles.
Yep.
That was a bold move that really paid off.
It really did. It gave the whole thing so much away. It just goes to show you that a creative risk, when you handle it with real cultural respect, can create something that feels totally new.
Okay, from ancient history, let's jump to the most complex, high-stakes science out there.
Yeah.
The quiet arms race in quantum computing. IBM made a huge move this week. They announced a new, massive $2 billion investment in their New York quantum computing center.
This is a direct shot at competitors like Google, who just claimed they achieved noise-resistant algorithms. The race for computational supremacy is absolutely on.
So what's the end goal here? What's the term we need to know?
The term is quantum advantage. That's the ultimate goal. It's the precise point where a quantum computer can solve a problem that is basically impossible for even the world's most powerful supercomputer.
Impossible meaning it would take thousands of years.
Exactly. It's the inflection point that will just fundamentally change what's possible with computation.
So why should someone listening to this right now care about a billion-dollar race in some lab?
Yeah.
What are the actual tangible implications of hitting quantum advantage?
Well, there are two big ones that will affect our future. First, the positive. It will revolutionize how we simulate molecular structures.
Which means?
Which means dramatically faster new drug development, new materials, personalized medicine, a huge leap forward. And second, let's say the terrifying implication. The power of quantum computing will let them break current encryption.
Oh.
Yeah. The systems we use for banking, for communications, for government secrets, they become obsolete overnight. That's why governments are so invested.
So we should all be saving up for a personal quantum PC.
That's the fantasy. But no, the source materials are clear that consumer PCs are not the business model. This $2 billion from IBM, it's all focused on enterprise-grade quantum cloud computing.
They want to rent the power.
They want to be the utility company. They'll rent that transformative power out to corporations, researchers, and governments.
We've covered so much ground in this deep dive, from a tiny 45-gram pair of silent AI glasses to the stunning success of Metroid Prime 4 on the Switch 2, and even reimagining Batman as an Aztec warrior.
It's dizzying, but that central insight really holds up. Even with all the economic struggles in tech, 2025 showed that creativity and investment are thriving everywhere. From the very top, with IBM's $2 billion, to the very bottom, with an indie dev making a simple river bottle game.
And that duality leads us to the final thought we want to leave you with. We saw this surge in creative low-tech nostalgia, the Splinter Cell mods, River Bottle Sim, even the ambient AI happening at the exact same time as multi-billion dollar cutting-edge science like IBM Quantum and ray tracing. So what does this simultaneous demand for both radical simplicity and radical complexity tell us about the future of attention and where you'll choose to spend your own energy in the years to come? Until next time, stay curious.